Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts hold something of your word for us, God. The word you want to speak this day, the word we need to hear. You are our strength and our redeemer. Amen. Religious historians would say that the 12-step movement, beginning with Alcoholics Anonymous, founded in the early 20th century, is really the first authentically American addition to Christian theology. Almost everything else that Protestant Christians believe has its root in another part of the world, mostly Europe. But there is something about this path, 12 steps to freedom from addiction, all kinds of addiction, that is peculiarly American. I wonder if you will hear that as we continue through this series. Last week, we talked about step one, acknowledging that we are powerless, that there is something that keeps each of us from living fully the life we would choose for ourselves. It may not look like an addiction, but there are lots of ways that you could find yourself in that picture. Maybe you worry constantly, maybe about your children, or your anger is uncontrollable, whether you throw tantrums or are prone to grand exits. You use silence as a weapon. Or maybe you talk compulsively. Or you're stressed all the time. Or you eat things that you know are not healthy for you. Or you work all the time. Or you procrastinate about important things. Or you try to control other people. Doing any of these things is unhealthy. It's unhelpful. Doing them over and over again, even after you know they won't help, is what you might call insane. Step two in the 12-step program says, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. A power greater than ourselves. That sounds like church, right? But actually, it's right here at step two that the church and the 12-step program have taken different paths. Both traditions would say the same thing, that salvation, healing, wholeness, peace with yourself and with God comes through a relationship with God. The way you get to that relationship in the church's practice has been to focus on God, learn the stories of the Christian tradition, study the teachings of the Bible and the church. The 12-step tradition says, the obstacle to a relationship with God, what keeps you from finding faith, isn't not knowing enough about God. It's about not knowing ourselves. You remember the prodigal son story? For the younger son who took his father's money and ran, there was a moment when he was so desperate that he came to himself, the gospel says. That's when he turned around and headed home. Surrendering to God, to any power greater than ourselves, can't happen until we, in some sense, come to ourselves. You hear that in the first words of this second step. We came to believe. 12-step folks would say that you have to find the longing inside of you before you can absorb anything about God. That there's a process, a gradual letting go, before you're ready to hand over anything to any God. AA folks say, we came to believe. That is, we woke up to the fact that our lives were not working, that we need something bigger, more powerful to move in us, to give us the freedom that we're looking for. The critical part of this process, the part that takes time and attention, isn't researching the right God. It's letting go of all our internalized myths about independence and willpower, and all those old resentments that keep the same tapes playing in our heads. Before your heart and your mind can be filled with something new, first, they have to be emptied of what they have been carrying around and what hasn't been working. In 12-step language, first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Somehow, over the years, most of us have accumulated things that are not serving us well. Too many opinions, a closed-down heart, a body we are defensive and defended about. Space has to open up inside of us before there's room for anything like God. You have to put down all your defenses, all those false programs for happiness, hurts from the past. These all are things that keep us from seeing clearly and from finding healing. That message is buried in the story we heard today that Roy read about Bartimaeus, the blind man. Bartimaeus had been blind for a long time, just like Daylene told the children. It was hard, but it gave him something to complain about. Every day, for years, he'd positioned himself by the side of the road and begged passersby for money. It was the only thing he could do to survive, right? Bartimaeus had almost completely alienated his friends and his family with his neediness, but he couldn't see that. All he could see was that he was doing what he needed to get by. He knew he was unhappy, but what choice did he have? He was blind. That was a given in his life. So what he worked on was getting the money he needed to live. How to do that wasn't obvious or easy. The regulars who came by had pretty much stopped noticing him. Strangers on the road found him a little obnoxious. Bartimaeus tried to make some changes to make himself more effective. He crossed to the other side of the road. He tried standing up instead of sitting. He tried lying down. He moved down the road to a new location. No change. No more money. He still wasn't okay. He wasn't looking for Jesus or religion or even healing. He just wanted enough money to get by. But Bartimaeus was close enough to the end of his rope that when a healer came walking down the road with a group of followers behind him, Bartimaeus took a chance. He shouted out to this name that he'd heard, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Now, I'm pretty sure that Bartimaeus had no idea, really, who he was calling to. He couldn't see. He hadn't read any newspaper reports about Jesus or heard speeches on television. He was taking a stab in the dark, knowing nothing other than his frustration with the situation that he was trapped in. And shouting out like that wasn't easy. All around him, out loud and in his head, were voices shushing him, telling him to be quiet, to act more dignified, less needy. But he was exhausted. discouraged, sick and tired, and sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so he came to himself, which is to say, he stopped listening to all those other voices so that he could hear for himself what he really needed. Jesus, Son of David, whoever you are, he might have added, have mercy on me. He asked the right person, because Jesus didn't just flip a coin into his cup. He didn't look at Bartimaeus and see just a lifelong beggar. Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And I imagine that Bartimaeus had to stop for a moment and think about that. And then he said something that I wonder if he had ever brought to consciousness before. Something he'd never even thought to ask or allowed himself to wish for. "I want to see," he said. "I don't just need enough money to keep living the same life I've been living. I want to see." "Okay," Jesus said. "Your faith has made you well." What did Jesus know about Bartimaeus' faith at that moment? What faith did Bartimaeus have? We know nothing about his religious background. He had not been traveling around the country trying to catch up with Jesus. The way the story is told, Bartimaeus sounds more like an opportunist, throwing himself on the mercy of a passing faith healer. So what was the faith that led Bartimaeus to healing? What's the faith that might lead us to healing? All the faith Jesus knew about, maybe all the faith Bartimaeus had, was contained in one sentence: "Teacher, let me see again." That wasn't a statement full of knowledge about who Jesus was and what he had the power to give. It was a statement about what Bartimaeus was ready to receive. God's invitations to us to change our lives, the offers that wake us up, don't usually come on soft pillows. They happen when we come to ourselves, when we confront our own deformities, the suffering or failures or habits that we finally know we cannot fix ourselves. Funny how grace comes when our own resources are exhausted, when we're ready to admit that we are not in control of our own lives and our own destinies, when we have faced honestly the bad news of our own experience. Addiction has been called a misdirected search for God. One alcoholic said, "I often thought my thirst was simply for alcohol, but it was not. It was for what alcohol did for me. It had the power to change my self-perception and my perception of the world. It made me feel bigger, more confident, more desirable. Indeed, more lovable. It made the world a friendlier, less hostile place." Probably each of us has looked for, maybe tried, something that we thought would do that for us. Maybe success, or productivity, competence, feeling needed. Any one of those things might give you a temporary dose of the affirmation you're looking for, but it comes at a cost. It's exhausting. The drive to earn other people's love or admiration or acceptance feels relentless. And all the time, there's someone standing in front of you asking, "What do you want me to do for you?" A power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, the second step says. The power is there. God is present whether you believe in God or not. That's why the 12-step program just talks about a higher power. They don't stop at step two and spend months teaching theology. It doesn't really matter what you call God or how you picture God. What makes the difference is whether you came to believe, whether you've gone the distance with yourself, come to know that you need something you cannot manufacture for yourself, no matter how good your intentions are or how committed you are to being a better person. After he was healed, Bartimaeus got up and followed Jesus. Healing, the granting of his sight, came to him as pure grace, Jesus' power, not his. There was nothing he had to do to earn it first. He didn't even have to believe in any right things. But afterward, he did have to do something to work at his own salvation. He had to not let anything get between him and the one who had healed him. You've heard alcoholics say that they are never recovered. They're always recovering. It takes effort, discipline, work. Recovering alcoholics make sobriety a priority every day, with meditation and reading and going to countless meetings and reaching out to other people. There's a program, work to be done, a path to get on and follow. But all of that comes after the healing that saved them. The embrace that heals us is God's. Our work, no small thing, is to get ourselves out of the way. Our cluttered expectations, our limited images of God, our hopelessness about all those things we've already tried, so that we might come to believe. Amen.